You are listening to the Lifelong Golfer Podcast, where we help you hit more bombs and play this great game of golf forever. I'm your host, Dr. J.P. Guidry, Doctor of Physical Therapy and Titleist Performance Institute Certified Golf Fitness and Performance Professional. Hey there, Lifelong Golfers. Dr. J.P. Guidry here. I wanted to talk a little bit about barbellsandbirdies.com. That is our apparel website where we have hats and other apparel that kind of represent our belief of treating golfers like athletes, going out and hitting bombs and playing this game we love forever. So go and give a look. We got hats and tees there, barbellsandbirdies.com, as well as ask that you give us a review, a like, a share on this podcast if you enjoy what you're hearing. This is a passion project of mine. And for me, it's just an excuse to kind of have conversations with people I want to talk to and kind of share my thoughts on golf and fitness and sports and anything else we talk about. So if this resonates with you, feel free to share it to family and friends and give us a good review if you can. Hey there, Lifelong Golfers. Dr. J.P. Guidry here. I'm grateful to have on Rich Brazzo. He is the founder and president of Second Nine Consulting. He's a former college coach at Seton Hall and West Point, involved with AGGA College Golf or AGGA Golf. And what he does is kind of finds the best fit for each player and family based on their priorities and finding a school and helping them out in their college search, which can be a very stressful process for families, and his job is to make it as simple as possible. So thanks for coming on, Rich. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. So we'll just kind of get started here. I'll let you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, in golf and how you kind of got to where you're at today.
Sure. Born and raised in just north of Boston, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and was a baseball player originally, but found out I was better at golf and ultimately wound up playing my college golf at Seton Hall in New Jersey. Played there for 4 years, 2 year captain. And then after I graduated in 2008, which for the parents out there, it was a pretty bad year to graduate, and realized that I wanted to get in the golf business. And originally I went and worked for the AJGA for a year, did a year on their internship circuit, then went back and got my MBA at Seton Hall and started coaching. Kind of during my AJGA time, I talked to a lot of coaches when I was at tournaments and thought, hey, I might be pretty good at this, and thought it was the recruiting side was quite interesting. And, ultimately went back to Seton Hall, got my MBA, and started coaching there. And then I coached at West Point after that, which was a terrific experience, and, learned so much about leadership and motivation, and the hard work of those young men and women is pretty incredible. And then after about, I was there 4 years, and then an opportunity came up to kind of get into this line of work, helping junior golfers with college placement, and was fortunate enough to, become one of the AJGA college golf advisors. So there's five of us that all run separate businesses, but do the same thing, helping families kind of navigate everything from what tournaments to play in, understand the path to whatever their goals might be, if their goal is to play at Stanford or Alabama or LSU or Oklahoma State, that's one path. If their goal is to play in the Ivy League or the Patriot League or get a great education, that might be a little bit different path, both in what it takes from a golf perspective, from a tournament perspective, from a, commitment to, other things in your game, that sort of thing. And, ultimately my experience as a junior golfer, while not too long ago, is entirely different than what it is now. And my parents didn't play golf and didn't go to four-year college. So I try to tell parents a lot, you're not really supposed to know this stuff. It's kind of it's a weird thing. Golf is a totally different animal than other sports. I'm sure you deal with other athletes in different sports as well. And, if you play, say, AAU baseball, you're a club swimmer or club soccer player, you may have a coach in that program that has some experience with how this goes, or has some experience with, hey, this is kind of your level, this is kind of where you go, but also like, hey, this is what we're going to go play in. right? We're going to go to these tournaments. You don't have a say, you know, show up when the bus leaves and we go play. And that it's kind of squared away. And in golf, you know, look, it used to be there was a couple of tours you could play. And, you know, different parts of the country have different tours. But now there's, it's an explosion. You could play a tournament damn near every day, practically all year, you know. And my job, as I see it, is to help families maximize their time and resources, whether it's, hey, you should play this, you shouldn't play in that, or hey, you should really look at these schools, you know, or those schools, and help kind of maximize the time there. I think, you know, a lot of times the frustration with families and parents and players through this is like not getting responses, or, you know, getting a lot of negative responses when, you know, maybe you're looking in the wrong kind of set of, you know, schools, where if you looked in a little different pod, you could have a lot of success quickly, you know, in finding a place to play. So that's the, you know, the genesis of it. And I've really enjoyed it. I worked about 100 and just over 125 families in 5 years. So it's been really fun. And yeah, looking forward to talking today.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because, you know, I didn't play junior golf growing up. I played baseball and basketball. I didn't really pick up a golf club till I got into my 20s. But so I had no idea of the, you know, I had friends that played, but I didn't pay attention to what they were doing, you know, when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, and then now, you know, getting into the career I'm in and working with golfers, and now working with a fair amount of junior golfers, and kind of realizing, talking to them, talking to their parents, and just like how in depth the navigating the junior tournament circuits and figuring out which tournaments to play and, you know, which ones you're going to get the most points from, and, you know, as far as your ranking, and then, you know, turning that into, you know, the college process, you know, it kind of blew my mind just how involved it was. It's not like you just,
pretty okay, crazy. Yeah. I mean, it's a little more confusing than it needs to be.
It seems that way, but from the outside.
Okay. And you know, there's a way everybody can do it. And I try to, it sounds hokey, but like everybody's path is different, you know, and, you know, different families need different things. They have different, you know, players come with different levels of play, different academic aspirations, financial considerations, travel constraints. You know, I was on the phone with a dad the other day who's, you know, he's a father who, you know, would have the ability to maybe pay for some of this travel, but he's saying, how do people just spend the time to go to a lot of these tournaments, right? And that's a good question. You know, I mean, it's a challenge, and you got to do what's right for you. And it may mean a lot of travel. It may mean playing a lot of stuff, you know, local to you. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get it done. And again, some of it depends on the player's aspiration. Like if you can't, you know, you have to, in my opinion, kind of be able to beat the players around you first before you really start moving on. Right. And if you can't beat the guys that are at home in your region and your state, you know, there's really not a whole lot of reason to start doing anything besides that until you get to that point. Unless, you know, depending on what a family may want to travel somewhere to play a tournament near family or whatever. But, you know, I think you got to be able to beat the guys at home or girls at home before you move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting, all the intricacies and in going into the decision making of, you know, I've got some kids I've worked with where, you know, really finances weren't much of an issue, as far as, you know, to travel, to play, all those things. And, you know, so some of them, it's time's the issue, money's the issue. And, you know, kind of listening to them having to navigate all that, you know, and these are players with realistic ambitions of playing at the college level. So, I mean, it's important. These decisions become more and more important.
And sometimes, you know, you know, as you get into the middle of a summer or a season or whatever, you know, you can have best laid plans to go do whatever it is you're going to do. And maybe you don't qualify for an event, or you don't get accepted into a field, or you don't, you have a bad run for 3 or 4 weeks when all the qualifiers are. And that throws a big wrench into things. And, you know, that's golf. And you know, you have to have backup plans and contingencies. And I think ultimately players too need to just go enjoy the game, you know, at the basic level, like it is a game. There is a lot of stress and expectation and different things that players put on themselves. That's very natural, that everybody kind of goes through, and, you know, you got to work through that as well, and not put too much pressure on one event or one shot or one hole, or, you know, and it's a long journey. And I know there's lots of players that play on tour that had, you know, average to below average college or junior careers that ultimately wind up playing on tour because, you know, their game, you know, took off at a later point in life. And there's some players, juniors, that have played their best golf at 13 or 14 years old, you know, and that's the reality too. So it's a fine line, and coaches understand that. I always try to encourage players and parents, you know, all these coaches are golfers, right? For by and large, you know, the exception of very few. And so what that means is they've all signed an incorrect scorecard. They've all shot 85. They've all hit the wrong ball. They've all done all the stuff that you're worried about doing. And so it's not perfection, right? Because if it was, you would have played at Torrey Pines this weekend, right? In the Farmers Insurance. And that's not, you know, they're not looking for that. They're looking for progression and potential, which is a dicey word. But you know, everybody sees into that, whatever it is, certainly in today's day and age, speed, you know, is a big, big factor. And, you know, I always joke with families, like, I'm a short guy. I've never hit the ball a long way. You know, even in my heyday, I didn't. And there are coaches that wouldn't recruit me because of that, right? Period. End of story. No matter if I always beat the guys they recruited, if I continue to beat the guys they recruited while I was in school, they just weren't going to recruit my profile, which is fine. And there's other guys that are going to recruit solely on results, right? And they don't care about all the extracurricular stuff. Either you can get the ball in the hole. So you have to find a marriage, so to speak, with a coach that makes sense for you. And just because, you know, if a coach says no, yeah, that kind of stinks in the moment, but it's also a real positive in the fact that you can just move on from them, right? And you can move on. If they don't want you, fine. You know, go prove it to them when you play against them while you're in school, and, you know, find somewhere that, you know, a home that they want you and they believe in you and they want you to succeed and help you succeed over your 4 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we had a pretty big junior tournament here in the end of December that Kelly Gibson Foundation puts on. And, you know, I was talking to a parent. I was down there watching some of the kids I work with, and I was talking to a parent of a girl, you know, from somewhere out of state, you know, super long hitter, obviously kind of newer to the game as far as, you know, skill set and just how to play the game. But I mean, she was out there driving par fours, you know, in this tournament. And, but, you know, sometimes three putting or, you know, getting up around the green and having trouble getting up and down. So, you know, it was interesting talking to him and kind of hearing, I believe she was a junior in high school. So they're starting, you know, they're obviously fairly deep into the recruiting process. And so kind of hearing some of the differences in schools that were interested in her and schools that weren't based on those two factors. So they were, some schools fell in love with her because of the distance and said, look, we can teach her how to play golf. And, you know, you had similar schools on similar levels and sometimes in the same conferences that were the exact opposite. You know, we need to see better scores. You know, she needs to put up lower numbers before, you know, we're going to kind of, you know, have
in some ways it's no different than other sports, right? You know, I coached at West Point. They ran the triple option in football. Okay. That's a certain type of player that you're recruiting for their program. Right. And, you know, a big strong arm quarterback that can't move out of the pocket, they're not going to probably recruit that guy. Even if they would be theoretically a great, it doesn't fit their system. You know, same in basketball, you're looking for a particular type of guard or big man or whatever. And golf coaches, while it's not that in the sense that they play a certain system, they may have a belief in how they want to construct their team, right? And they may have, you know, they may say, you know, look, I already recruited another person in that class, boy or girl, that's very consistent, is always going to be my number three or four player, is going to shoot 68 to 74 every time. I need that, you know, high risk, high reward bomber that could shoot 64, but could also shoot 90. Okay. And that may be the type of profile they're looking for, or they may be looking for a person to come in, without, you know, needing much scholarship money, maybe on an academic scholarship that's going to help them keep their grades up, you know, and you never quite know exactly what they're looking for. And certainly depends on when you're, you know, what part of the recruiting cycle you're hitting with these coaches, but they're all looking for a particular, and they maybe want to balance their team with some different types of players, or they, you know, some, you know, there's some men's coaches now that say, look, unless you have, you know, 120 swing speed, 180, 190 ball speed, we're not going to touch you. And, you know, that is what it is. And if you don't have that, you don't have that. And you got to move on, you know, and that may or may not work for that coach, you know, because there's a lot of risk in that as well. And so, you know, you have to try to get, you know, one thing I encourage players is you're trying to get information from the coaches just as much as they're trying to get information from you. It's a two-way street, right? So you have to, you know, learn what they want, what they're looking for. Are they a coach that, you know, you're going to mesh with, right? You know, both from a golf perspective, from a course management, from a motivational structure, discipline, all that. Like, you're going to spend a lot of time with this coach, right? And they have a big impact on your life, positive or negative. Certainly probably, you know, the culture, the team as well, right? So getting to know the team, which is virtually impossible right now unless you knew players in the team already or can follow them on Instagram or whatever. But that kind of leads to, you know, a whole different, you know, conversation. But, you know, the players, you know, the culture, the team, that's a big deal, you know, in my opinion. Like, who are you going to be surrounding yourself with? Because you're going to spend an awful lot of time with the coach and the team for that 4 years, more than your family, you know, in that 4 years by far. You know, you're going to be with them more than anybody. So you got to be very comfortable. And you can only get that way by, you know, having a dialogue and creating communication and learning about what they, you know, what they're doing, just as much as you're trying to sell to them what you have to offer, you know. And if you don't like what you hear, that's okay, you know, move on, you know, and find somewhere that you do like what, you know, because you don't want to just take it or jump at it. Like, you got to do your, you know, I think families have to do their diligence to make sure it's a good fit.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I had the coach of the men's and women's coach at Loyola, New Orleans down here on the podcast a few weeks ago. You know, I was kind of asking him some similar questions on, you know, just the recruiting process. And, you know, a lot of his recruiting was driven by grades, you know, integrity and things like that, where maybe performance on the course might have been the third or fourth attribute that they're starting to look at. And so it's some of it was the requirements of the university, you know, and so he was kind of talking about some of the challenges of that. You know, we kind of look for these priorities that not all the best golfers may necessarily have or have what they need to get into there. And so now we're having to kind of look at, you know, when you're looking at performance on the course as the third or fourth, you know, priority in the recruitment process, you know, it kind of changes things versus it being number one.
Totally. You know, and you know, that's the case in a lot of situations. And, you know, it brings to mind a lot of times players and parents and, you know, get real wound up when maybe a coach comes and watches them play, right, for the first time or whatever. And, you know, the golf is very easy to figure out for these guys or girls, right? That's not the issue. That's taken care of in four or five holes and a little bit of range time. Like, they're going to kind of sort through that, whatever. And it's not, doesn't really have anything to do with if you shoot 68 or 85, you know. Like, I always preferred to watch players that struggled, that shot 78 or 82 or 84. And how did they handle themselves? You know, what was their, you know, everything is great when you shoot 68 or 67 and the birds are chirping and you get a good drop and, you know, the rules officials are, you know, birds, everything's good. When it's 84, it's a different story, right? And how do you, are you throwing clubs? Are you cursing? Are you yelling at your mom or your dad? Are you being disrespectful to your playing competitors? You know, what's the face of adversity? And, you know, additionally, like, you know, a lot of these teams and coaches, you know, you have to take your team to a country club, or you're playing your home course is someone else's facility, right? It's not your own. And you have to, you know, you're dealing with membership and you know, donors and people that are, you know, can impact your program positively or negatively. And if you bring in a bunch of knuckleheads, you know, you're going to have some knucklehead stuff happen. And that ultimately, golf coaches are paid somewhat on performance, but mostly on running a clean program. Most athletic directors don't want a headache from the golf team.
Yeah.
Their headaches come from other sports. Okay. And the sports that make the money, and that's okay. Right. And golf is like, we got to have a good GPA, you know, good, no knucklehead stuff. Oftentimes you're the one, you know, I make the analogy, like, if you're a big money donor to a particular school, you know, you're not taking snaps at quarterback in practice. Right. But the chances are you're going to host the golf team at your club. Okay. Or you're going to take them on spring break, or you're going to do something where you're going to be around that team, maybe even more than the big, you know, the big football or basketball or baseball or lacrosse or whatever, right? Person to person, certainly. And so, you know, coaches saying, well, I gotta have kids that can handle that, that when they have the logo on the chest, I don't have to worry about it. And that can handle, you know, you said the grades. I mean, you know, golf, people don't really think about it. Golf teams miss the most school of any sport on campus. Okay. Football plays 10 games, 12 games, half of them at home, half of them are on the road, right? So they're away from campus 6 days a year, 10 days a year, right? If that, basketball, you know, maybe they're away 30 days. You know, golf, you're playing, you know, Division One, 24 days of competition, practice rounds, travel days, spring break, you're on the road 40, 50 days a year, you know, and during the week mostly, right? Because games aren't always on the week, you know, tournaments are always on the weekends in college golf. So can you handle your work so that when you're at the tournament, you can worry about golf and not worry about your biology test or your finance exam or whatever, you know, and that's a big deal. Because if you can't handle the stuff at home, you're not going to perform when you're on the road.
Yeah. And I think that's the uniqueness of the, you know, the college golfer. You know, I've had this conversation from a strength and conditioning standpoint and understanding that, you know, they're being pulled in 20 different directions. So that from our job, that changes how we're going to program their workouts and things like that, understanding that, you know, they've got school and the stress related to that. They've obviously got travel for tournaments, practice, all those things. You know, they've got your typical everything else, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old kids going to be dealing with, you know, sure, relationships and all that, you know, all the things that go along with being that you have to kind of incorporate into your decision-making progress when you're putting together a workout and a program for that. You know, and so it,
you know, I always, you know, I oftentimes like at the end of, you know, maybe the, after a player signs, you know, or commits to a school, you know, then it turns into, okay, how do we then get ready for college? Right. And the biggest piece of advice is, you know, get in the gym, use the summer and spring before to get really physically strong, you know, mentally be ready to go, because players will have never dealt with the rigor of a college season before, right? Between, you know, playing, you know, you're on the road, you know, you're traveling, you're probably not eating, you know, you're trying to eat good, but it's difficult, you know, and you're eating in a cafeteria and you're on your own, you're making decisions really on your own for the first time, you know, so you're making all the right decisions. You know, additionally, you're qualifying, you know, during the week to go play a tournament on the weekend, you know, so you're competing, you know, 4 or 5 days, 6 days a week, you know, and even if it's not competition in the truest form, you're competing against your teammates at home to show the coach that you're the one that should be going on the road, right? And so that has a whole other mental, you know, component where you're burning a lot of energy, and, you know, being really fit and like ready to rock is a huge deal. And, you know, oftentimes at the end of that first semester, players are like, you know, totally wiped out and they didn't really see what was, if, especially if they played a lot. If they didn't play a lot, they kind of adjust and get back into it. And, you know, and then your fitness routine may change in school depending on, you know, what their program is. You may have to do it on your own. You may not. You may have to do a totally different, you know, set of workouts than what you were anticipating. So I think, and the golf courses are longer, right? I mean, at the most basic level, you know, a junior tournament might be played at 66 or 6,800 yards. And if you play the same golf course, you know, you'd play the back of every box to tuck pins compared to a fairly easy setup most of the time in junior golf, right? So just to be ready for that, you know, an extra 4 or 5 miles an hour club head speed and a little more height on the ball and, you know, ability to, you know, handle a 36 hole day. You know, they don't play 36 hole days much in junior golf, you know, for better or worse. I wish they would, because I think that's what prepares, you know, college golf's 36 holes a day and 18 the next, and practice round and travel, and it's a grind, you know, and you got to be ready for that, you know, and if you're not, that's a big punch in the face, because, you know, that's a totally different set of mental and physical challenges than a player has encountered before.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of one of the biggest things I try to prepare my kids, especially when they get kind of senior year in high school, is A, getting on a schedule and a routine, because that way you're ready for that. And you know, I try to kind of get an idea, okay, once they've signed, once they know where they're going, okay, what does that program's workouts look like? When do they work out? You know, I've got a girl that, you know, her program, they do morning workouts. So 6 a.m. workouts. And so one thing I've had her doing is, all right, here's your schedule. You're going to start working out 6 a.m. because, yep. you know, I don't want you going to college and then all of a sudden that's new, you know, and you're jumping mm-hmm. into it. And so, you know, trying to figure out those things and just getting on any type of routine as similar as possible to what they're going to be expecting when they get to that level. One thing I want to talk about, you know, real quick here is, you know, these are conversations that I've had kind of with the parents of the juniors I work with is kind of the unique challenges that COVID has presented in the recruiting process, you know, as far as, you know, the contacts they can have, you know, obviously to some degree, you know, depending on where you live, travel and tournament accessibility. And, you know, I know here, you know, obviously in the beginning of it all, everything got shut down and it got heavy loaded into the fall. You know, and so now these kids are playing their normal fall tournaments plus tournaments that got rescheduled. And so now some of them, they're having to choose between two tournaments that they both mm-hmm. wanted to play both, or maybe they qualified for both, but they're on the same weekend. So it's definitely provided some unique challenges. What are some things you've seen and kind of maybe how you've changed your approach to navigating the process with the family?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a totally different ball game than it was a year ago, you know, and for a variety of reasons, you know, number one, well, two main reasons. One, Division I players got an extra year of eligibility across the board. So not just seniors last year, every player that was on a team last year gets an extra year of eligibility if they want it, which coaches have never had to deal with before. And, you know, they're trying to sort through, you know, obviously some seniors came back, some didn't. You know, now they're trying to figure out, okay, what juniors are coming back for next year? What sophomores are going to come back the year after that? And that's really changed the dynamic a lot in respect to, you know, these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids that are in college having to make a decision 2 or 3 years down the road when they don't know what they're going to have for lunch today, right? And so they may change their mind 3 or 4 times. You know, some programs have been impacted financially. You know, obviously the other big impact is that, you know, they haven't been able to be on the road recruiting, watching players play since March, and they haven't been able to have players on campus as well. Now, it's a different rule in Division II and III. They're allowed to do stuff on a school-by-school basis. Those divisions have kind of left it up to the schools on how they want to handle it. So that's a different ballgame. We'll just focus on Division I for now. So right now, April 15th is the day everyone's eyeing to begin, you know, possibly doing that, you know, beginning travel to watch players play and bring them into campus. Whether or not that date stays, your guess is as good as mine. Look, this is not golf only rules. This is across the board NCAA. So this is football, basketball, baseball, the whole nine. And they're not going to give certain schools a disadvantage compared to other schools, right? So if some schools are in, say, Southern California or New York or New Jersey or wherever, and they have real hardcore travel restrictions, they're probably not going to lift this until everyone's on kind of a level playing field. So while we hope it's April, it could get pushed back further, right? The hope would be maybe they would allow players to come start visiting campuses, because at the end of the, you know, and meeting with them in person or, you know, in some way, because it's really a challenge. And coaches, you know, players need to have a lot. And I try to encourage patience as much as I can with the players and parents, because coaches are there to deal with this. And for the vast majority of them, they've recruited players by watching them play and meeting them in person, you know, in addition to doing some background with talking to swing coaches or strength coaches or mental coaches or whoever. And the two main pillars they have been taken away, right? So you're starting to see a little bit of a thaw maybe in like kids committing and so forth for the class of 2022, which is difficult, you know, to do that. But I think families and coaches are starting to maybe see like, hey, I might have to do this without actually, you know, visiting with a coach. And obviously doing things on Zoom and FaceTime and so forth can give you something, and schools have pivoted. You can do really a lot on like virtual tours and stuff on websites are a lot better now than they were, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago. But I always encourage players too, like you can still go visit these schools on your own if you are comfortable traveling and doing that. And if you are, I would encourage it, because at the minimum, you want to be comfortable with how far away is this place from home? Where is it? What's the neighborhood like? Where's Chipotle? Where's the library? Where's, you know, where's the cat? Where am I going to do my thing? Where's the golf course in relation to where I'm going to live. Like, where's the facility? Where's the training room and the, you know, all that stuff you get a feeling of, and at least put something in your head on what it's like. And if there's people there on campus, you can at least kind of see a little bit of campus life theoretically. And it shows coaches that you're quite serious in, you know, that school, you know, which is, I think, another positive thing. But it's been very challenging, you know, and it's been very hard on the class of 2021. It may wind up being harder on the class of 2022. And it probably isn't going to really play itself out for, you know, a couple, 3 or 4 years, you know. And in addition, there's like, I think the other day I heard there was over 200 players in the transfer portal, which is a lot. Okay. So, you know, there, you know, and that includes fifth year players, maybe. Okay, I'm graduating from such and such a school. I want to go play another year somewhere else, right? And, you know, some coaches are going to take that, you know, if they can get a great player on campus for a year and they feel like they're that close to winning, they may do that in lieu of bringing in a high school player. So it's tough. You know, it's really challenging. And so what I've tried to do to answer your second question is, you know, players just have to have a really open mind now more than ever. Number two, you know, if I would start with a client with like, say, 20 schools or 25 schools, which was normal in the past, right now we're at like 50. Okay. Because I think you just have to have more, you know, you have to have more options, and you have to kind of be ready for the fact that it may not go according to plan, you know, that you had in your head a couple of years ago. You're going to have more of an open mind. And that's just the reality. And it's unfortunate. It's not these players' fault. It's not the kids' fault. There's nothing they can do about it, you know, but if they want to play college golf, there's still going to be a place for them to do that. And, you know, encourage families to kind of really think about what the priorities are, you know, whether it's getting a great education, getting some of it paid for, playing time, you know, or is the aspiration to play on tour. Okay. Well, if that's the case, then what goes into that, whether it's a facility or a coach or playing every week or being in a program that's, hey, I'm going to be the 10th guy and see what happens. You know, I'm going to get better every day by playing against great players. Right. And there's no right or wrong to that. Everybody's different. And sorting through that and then really attacking that, you know, subset of schools. A lot of players are taking a gap year, you know, postgraduate year. A lot of kids in 2021 chose to do that. A lot of players in 2022 are already choosing to proactively begin the process of doing that. Even some 2023s have started kind of doing, you know, making that decision, just to give themselves more time, let things settle down. Like you alluded to, you know, tournament play, you know, I live in South Carolina, you know, it's pretty much normal here. You know, a lot of my families I work with, say in New York or Connecticut or New Jersey, they didn't start playing until July or August, you know, and then they played every week for 8 or 10 weeks. And then I'm sure you saw it. I saw a lot of injuries, you know, wrist problems or forearm problems or back problems or whatever, because they were playing too much, you know, and it wasn't anybody, you know, it was hard to turn tournaments down. They normally play X amount of events a year. They didn't play for 4 months. You know, it's going to get crammed into a smaller schedule. So hopefully this summer they can stretch it back out and play sort of a normal, normal event schedule and get coaches back out there watching them play, I think is important. So, you know, and being very proactive with these guys, you know, these coaches as well, right? Like being, okay, here's who I am. Here's what I'm about, you know, being clear to them, like, okay, if you're a serious player with aspirations and you're working out and you have different workout programs, or you work with a coach that has great TrackMan or SwingCat info, and you can share these different things with coaches to show them, okay, I'm trying to be on a different path than just, I want to play college golf. Like, that's not a very good answer. Yeah. Right. Like, here, what are you doing to achieve that? And sharing that, you know, coaches like plans, right? I mean, you think about coaches in any sport, Nick Saban or Bill Belichick or Brad Stevens or whoever, they go to practice with a plan, right? Every day. And, you know, these coaches go to practice with golf coaches go to practice with a plan every day, right? And, you know, show them, you know, show these coaches your plan. And if you don't have a plan, then get one, you know, because it's probably not going to work very well unless you have one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, as we kind of close things out, lastly here, any kind of parting advice you have from any listeners out there that may be kind of just starting to navigate the recruitment process, parents, kids alike, and then maybe kind of just finish up where people can contact you or find out more about you and what you do as well.
Yeah, sure. I think the biggest piece of advice I could give people right now is, like I said, to have an open mind, engage with the process earlier rather than later, right? So if you're a younger parent, even eighth or ninth grade, it's not too early to start kind of thinking about some of this stuff. And especially as you play a lot of these tournaments that are in college towns, or you're driving throughout the Southeast or wherever you can, you're driving somewhere, you can maybe pull off and go see a school. I think visiting campuses over time, even if it's not your junior or senior right now or whatever, like just starting to lay the groundwork for that is important. If you are older, engaging with a lot of schools and talking to a lot of them and seeing what's out there, and you may be surprised at what you find. I think most players are, they have something in their head. They want to play in the SEC or the ACC, but maybe there's something else that's just as good for them, for what they need academically and athletically and socially and all that. I think this year, kind of getting back into the swing of tournaments and playing, a lot and getting prepared and, doing the stuff in the gym and in practice and with your coach to get ready for the tournaments and try to take a little bit of the pressure off, I think is valuable. But ultimately, like, the patience thing is really important. Like, this thing goes really, really slow until it doesn't. Like, it's 0 to 100. You're going to feel like nothing's happening, and then you're going to commit in like 2 weeks. And that's just kind of the way it goes, right? Like, it's just, it's not necessarily a steady progression in that sense. Like, it's going to be kind of slow, 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 and then you're done. And that's just, be ready for that. And you'd be ready for that by doing research. I think one thing I could, you can find all my stuff at second9golf.com, but we have a lot of great information on the AJGA website. We have a bunch of recruiting stuff both on their regular page and in the player center. There's a lot of really good stuff that did a video series a few months ago with the five of us that answers a lot of these questions. Junior Golf Scoreboard, there's a lot of really good recruiting information on there as well. I'd encourage you to go check all that out under their being recruited page. We've done a lot of articles and videos for them that I think are helpful for those that are getting going or in the middle of it or whatever. And certainly you can get in touch with me. My website's second9golf.com. Follow me on Instagram at second9golf. And, if anybody ever has any questions, just feel free to give me a shout. Always happy to chat. And, hopefully we'll see you at a tournament somewhere along the way.
Awesome, Rich. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. I'll make sure to link all of those into the show notes as well, so people can have easy access to them. Well, again, I thank you for coming on and taking the time. We'll have to sit down and do this again in the future. You have a good day.
Yeah, man, that was fun. Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you.
See you.
Thanks for listening to the show. Bye-bye.